listening to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gromatsky, and today I'm going to be talking to Charles Theophilus, who is a medical doctor, specifically spinal surgeon, has been doing that for many years, been very accomplished, has worked on PGA players and other people, and he has also gone on to be involved in numerous different patents and has had an incredible career along the way, helping many people and now hopefully helping thousands and millions more through some of the technologies and companies he's involved with on the business side. So thank you for being on today.
Thank you so much, Alex, for having me here. It's a pleasure.
So I'd love to hear a little bit about your history and your story, because I understand that you were a spinal surgeon and then you also got into the business side of it. How did that go from being a doctor to now getting into business as well? Because sometimes people just focus on the medical side of things and have less of a business role, but you obviously intersected both.
Well, I was very fortunate. You know, I went into medicine because I loved medicine and I wanted to help patients. And I focused on neurosurgery because I wanted to do something that was going to evolve with time, that there's going to be inventions and things, progress in what we did. So I chose neurosurgery, and I attended the Sims Murphy Clinic through my residency after going to Emory University for college and med school. And initially, I wanted to be a pediatric neurosurgeon. And I worked at St. Jude's, and I did a lot of research on pediatric brain tumors, presented papers nationally to the neurosurgery associations. But then I had my first child. And when I had my first child, every time I would operate on a kid or a baby, I had my son's face in my image, and I decided I couldn't do that. I wasn't built for that. And so I was very fortunate at the end of my residency, my last year, we had two of the best neurosurgical spine doctors come to our university and join our clinic, Dr. Peter Clara and Kevin Foley. And these guys were the elite of neurosurgical spine. And my whole last year, I spent learning minimally invasive spine surgery and spinal instrumentation, which neurosurgeons never learned. Only the orthopedics did it. So I came and I started my career in 1993 after getting my fellowship at Massachusetts General, and came to Florida and joined somebody for 1 year and then went into, you know, solo practice. And within 5 years, I realized what this community needed, and all you had to do to be an excellent doctor is care about quality, take care of your patients, and work hard. And I had the motto of never say no to a physician if they need help. Even if you're on call or not on call, you just can't say no to somebody because they'll never call you again. And within 5 years, I had the largest private neurosurgery clinic in the state of Florida. And I was doing up to 15 surgeries a week, and I was burning myself out. When you get that busy, then the spine companies start knocking on your door because they want you to use their equipment. And so I started becoming affiliated with spine companies on product design and development. But initially, I was on the lecture circuit. So I would go around the country training other surgeons how to do these surgeries. And this led to me coming out with a new technique for spine surgery called the Polar technique, which now is probably the most common procedure we do in spine. It's called a TLIF, for those who are knowledgeable in medicine. In 2000, I performed the first live streamed internet spine surgery, and that was fun. That was fun. We had cameras in the room, and this was live. And I was so nervous, Alex. I came in there, I was scrubbed, and everyone's looking at me, and they go, "Dr. Theophilus." I go, "What?" They go, "Where's your mask?" I'm nervous. I came in without a mask, and so ran back outside, re-scrubbed, and put a mask on, and went and did the procedure, which was, you know, it was excellent, and it got my reputation out there. But with that business, I started burning out. And I'm very fortunate to have a blessed wife who's an attorney who runs our family businesses. And she sat me down and she knows I'm a family man. I'm of Greek heritage, and the Greek heritage is all about the family. And she sat down. She goes, "You're missing your kids grow up. I think it's time. It's not about the money. You just have to enjoy your family." And I made a lifestyle change. I was overworked. I was working 24/7. I was on staff of almost 10 hospitals. I was never home. And I was working 24/7. I would come home at 1 o'clock in the morning. They called me at 2 o'clock to go see a blood clot in the brain on a non-insured patient. And of course I went and never said no. Yeah. But in 2001, and I was at that critical phase of burnout in medicine and realized I need to start looking into the business of medicine. You know, I've gotten the art of the surgery techniques down. I've got my reputation built. So what I did is I streamlined my medical practice. I dropped all healthcare plans and I went to private pay. And with my reputation, it worked. But also what I did is I still took the charity work. I was the only neurosurgeon in the city that did our charity work electively. It's called the healthcare district. And I did that for 20 years as a payback to my community. But what also I did is I introduced ancillary services to my practice for revenue generators. So I brought X-ray in, I brought MRI in, laser therapy. I developed spine nutraceuticals to help with spine pain. And I built two state-approved procedure rooms in my practice where I did injections and lesser invasive procedures, trying to prevent people from having back surgery. And that was my whole goal. I was very conservative. My goal was, you'll be happier with me if I got you better without surgery. And that's why the PGA players came to me, because I didn't have to operate on any of them. I got them better conservatively. And interestingly enough, the quality got better. The personal care got better. These patients got my cell numbers because I wanted that personal experience. And I tripled my income and decreased my workload by 50 to 70%.
Wow.
And that's what I started thinking of the name Smart Medicine, or the business of medicine. Well, that freed up time for me. So now I had more free time. And then I started getting into the FDA trials. And I was involved in numerous FDA trials. And I actually was the principal investigator of one of the artificial disc trials called FlexiCore, which was a huge deal. There was 30 sites among the country, the FDA trial of testing artificial disc implants to preserve motion. And I was the national investigator, and I was responsible for lecturing nationally and internationally on our results. And I did that for over almost 10 years while still practicing medicine. I would go present our data at our spine meetings nationally and internationally, and my reputation continued to grow. Well, also, I started investing in spine companies at that time. And with the increase in revenue, what I did is I diversified. We started a commercial real estate business that I funded, that my wife ran throughout the state of Florida, that she manages and controls. But also I invested in spine companies, which I realized quickly that those returns were 10x if they worked. And my first one was the artificial disc company. But then in 2001, we started a spine company called K2 Medical that I was one of the founders of. Actually, the founding meeting was at my house. It was very interesting. And it's how I became more associated with the Errigos, which is J.P. Errigo, who's a patent attorney and an inventor, and Tom Errigo, who's the head of spine at NYU. And we started this company with other spine surgeons. And by 2000, I think in 10, Welsh Carson bought into us. By 2014, we were the largest private spine instrumentation company in the world. And by 2018, it sold to Stryker for $1.4
billion. Wow.
A very successful spine company. It was all based on surgeon participation and surgeon involvement, not only with ownership, but in development of products. So what we had was a board of almost 20 top spine surgeons in the country. the thought leaders designing products. And we called it a board of scientific advisors, and I was part of it. So we would come and meet, and we would just design products. And the products we designed became some of the best products in spine. And I personally have patented or have my name associated with almost 30 patents now with product development, which was another source of income. And I loved product development. Because what I believe was, if you can make the products better, the patients do better.
Of course.
And that's what we were focused about. So that was very successful. And that led to numerous patents and products that the company came out with. And I personally came out with that I licensed to also other companies. And by 2005, we formed another company called Electrical. And I'll get into that one later, because that's the one that we currently have and is publicly traded. But I continue to practice medicine, doing the FDA trials, you know, seeing patients on this modified schedule, and I loved it. And I was happy as can be until around 2019/20, where I started having multiple surgeries, unfortunately, to my spine. Ironic as it can be, I'm a spine surgeon.
Yeah. And
what you realize is you're operating bent over weighing 20 pounds of lead doing minimally invasive surgeries for 6 hours at a time. Well, that takes its toll on you, especially your spine. But what I realized was the damage it caused to my arms. And for a lot of years, we saw skin changes in my arms, and I would go to dermatologists and no one could figure out what in the heck was going on with me. And my arms would turn purple, and then the skin would slough off and I would bleed and itch. Oh. And it was interesting. It only was between my elbows and my wrists.
Yeah.
Well, when you think of operating, you can't wear any x-ray protection between your wrists and your elbows because that's sterile. You scrub it. So you can't put any lead covering over it that's not sterile because it can't work. You can't operate.
Yeah.
So we didn't realize doing all this minimally invasive surgery using live x-ray to place the implants properly because they're minimally invasive through small incisions that all this radiation damage was happening to our arms. And eventually I got biopsied and they diagnosed it with radiation damage to my arms. And they told me either you walk away or eventually you lose your arms.
Oh no.
So 2022 in January, I decided to walk away. And that's when I entered Wharton's and decided I might as well learn some business at 61 years old. And I got my GMP graduate within 1 year, and it's probably one of the best things I've ever done. I've never seen a P&L statement in my entire life. My wife handed the finances, and I probably shouldn't be saying this on a Wharton's podcast, but the deal with my family and my marriage was I'm practicing medicine. I want to get the best results for my patients. I don't want to have to worry about the numbers and the finances. And the joke was, I never saw my income statement ever. I never knew how much I made because I didn't want to know. Because I felt once a doctor can associate how much he charges and makes per procedure, then that influences a doctor's decision. And I don't want finances to influence my decision. Didn't want that even near me. So I never looked at, it's really interesting. I never looked at my income statements. My wife covered the numbers. I signed them. And I trust her. We have a great marriage. And I didn't know my net worth, and I never wanted to know it until I stopped working. Then I decided I better start knowing what the heck's going on around here.
Yeah.
And I realized that with the investments we've made and this current investment company that we had, Electrocore, is one of the most exciting things that we've ever done. I definitely want to spend some time talking about that. But, you know, I realized my wife did a great job with the real estate and we were in a good place. And I'm now entering into the business world more with more time and helping ElectroCore promote its products and to tell everybody about how the wonderful world of vagus nerve stimulation.
So I really appreciate that background. It's very helpful and insightful. And I love your story. And you covered quite a bit of depth in it as well. And some of the things you've gone through really show and pave a path for, I think, what maybe the future or next generations can even consider about if they're thinking about spinal surgery. Because one thing that you touched on, which was really interesting, is wanting to get into a field that I, for lack of better words, you felt was growing or was still evolving, which I think is really important. And another is focusing on customers or patients and not letting ethically, you know, finances influence your decision making. I think those are really important core concepts that you have. Where did those, I guess, theories come from? Because, you know, many people go into what they know. Some people are more worried about the numbers. What made you want to just focus on something that was evolving versus something that was already established, where you don't have to worry about learning new things all the time?
Well, you probably have heard this story 1,000 times. My dad was a Greek immigrant, came over here penniless, went to Georgia Tech, not even knowing English, audio taped his lectures, came home, and his aunt, who lived in Atlanta, translated until he learned the language. Got his master's in chemistry at Georgia Tech and was only a few months away from his PhD, had his second child and realized he couldn't afford it anymore and had to walk away from his PhD and his biggest regret in his life. And he taught me work hard and the concept of delay gratification, which I think is one of the most important concepts, that delay your gratification for down the road. Work hard now and you can enjoy it later. And I think that's a very important concept. And with that concept of working hard, that what drove me to entering a field that we could make advances in. Since I've entered neurosurgery, the advancements in neurosurgery are unbelievable. This whole world of minimally invasive spine surgery has evolved into being billions of dollars of industry. And I was on the forefront of it. And most of my products I invented were in minimally invasive spine surgery. The beauty about it was the gentleman that trained me is the godfather of minimally invasive spine surgery. He's making over $25 million a year in patent royalty alone on his adventures as a neurosurgeon. He's the chairman of our program in Tennessee at Sims Murphy, and he still works, and he still works hard. Well, my father had built an industrial chemical manufacturing companies, private label, did very well. And when it came to education, he strongly believed in education. Well, my brother and my sister didn't live up to that. They didn't finish college. So being the last child, dad looked at me, son, you got to go to college and become a doctor. And that got me into medicine. And I realized that I fell in love with it. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I love taking care of patients. Alex, the biggest joy for me was not the paycheck, it was the hug I got, making someone better. And the hug I got from someone making someone better without surgery was a bigger hug than the ones with surgery. Because they know you could have taken a shortcut and operated on them and made money, and made more money, but you didn't. You got them better with a couple $100 injection, or you got them better with less financial rewards, but with a less invasive technique. And that's what my reputation became, was that people really truly believed what I said. They knew I was gonna be an honest opinion, and they knew I wasn't gonna do it for financial reasons. I didn't have any reason to, and I didn't want to.
Well, given that you started with children and then I'm gonna say had the emotional connection to your child being born and then not being able to, it seems like you're very empathetic and compassionate on that regard, and that it was really something that struck with you that you didn't want to operate on children anymore once you had your kid. So that really speaks a lot about your connection to human beings in general. So I can imagine that people would trust you as their doctor, given that you're probably very empathetic on that regard.
Well, you know, I think we, especially now that I'm in the shoes of a patient, it's a different light. You know, that's, I think the best thing that could happen to a physician is them becoming a patient.
I believe.
Because you want to be treated like you treat others. Well, you better treat others well if you want to be treated well.
So then one thing you brought up that we didn't really touch on, and maybe it's obvious now or not, but what do surgeons do now, you know, that have long careers, given that you have your x-ray damage on your arms or on your forearms? Is there new practices now? Is this like still evolving? How long?
It's the shift into robotic surgery.
Okay.
That shift will computerize everything. All the approaches will be computer assisted and robotic assisted, that you will not have to need live x-ray for. That's what's happening now. I just happen to be between the two periods of going from, I don't want to say barbaric surgery, but open spine surgery. I was the first minimally invasive transition group where we did it based on x-ray, and now it's evolved to not needing that much x-ray. I just happened to be caught in the middle of the zone. I think in the future, people would be using computer-assisted x-ray, or without x-ray, computer-assisted technologies to help them with approaches.
So I guess that's the downside and the upside of being in a growing, evolving industry that's, I don't want to say in its infancy when you started, but some of the things that it's evolving into might not be as well known, such as the impact of x-rays over and over again on your forearms.
It's true, and especially with the artificial disc, you know, I was on the pioneer and the forefront of artificial disc surgery. I was probably known as being one of the top guys in artificial disc surgery. And with those, they have to be precisely placed because everyone's going to see your x-ray. And you better make sure that that x-ray is perfect. So you change the position of these devices by millimeters to make them perfect. And each time you do that, you have to do an x-ray. Because only an x-ray is live confirmation of where the implant is. And can you imagine not doing it? I've seen surgeons not do x-rays and put implants in the spinal cord and not know until after the patient woke up and is not moving anything that the implant's in the spinal cord. I've seen that. Well, I'd rather get an x-ray to my arm and not that happen, not have that happen to somebody. So even though it was detrimental to me, I didn't really know the extent of what was going on, but I was willing to make that sacrifice to make sure that the patient was gonna have the best outcome.
Yeah, and based on some things you said as well, you know, millimeters, you sound then like you're also a very detail-oriented person. Has that always been the case?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be detail-oriented to be a neurosurgeon. I mean, all the brain surgeries, Alex, we perform, clipping aneurysms, taking out brain tumors, that's precision. And it's a very precise world of what we did. And the problem also in this country is that patients expect perfection. Patients think, I don't want to say they think physicians are God, they expect physicians to be gods. And this is the problem with American society. They don't realize physicians are human beings. Stuff happens in surgery. It does. You can go to the best in the world and stuff happens. Not their fault. It just happens, you know? And that's why there's a God that, you know, we can't control everything. I had to be as perfect as possible. You want to meet someone who beat himself up when he had a complication? Alex, for 3 months, if I ever had a complication, I would beat myself up because I was so disappointed in myself. I didn't cause a complication. It just happened, but I was still disappointed. And I had to make the patient better. And what I was good at is, even if something happens, I go to the nth degree to make it better. And I will not quit until the patient is better. Yeah. I wasn't one of those doctors that say, nothing's wrong with you, go away and blow it off. I'd fix it. I'd make sure everything was perfect.
But it sounds like your way of thinking and operating, you know, has led to huge strides in the space, has helped many people. So I think, you know, the world is better off based on your involvement in this area. When did you realize that you were a detail-oriented person? And I'm going to say maybe even a perfectionist. Or is that just in the specific field?
Oh, no, that's in everything. Ask my kids. Yeah. I'm blessed to have three boys, all went to grad school, very highly educated, all working hard. Dad's detail oriented. I have to be. I expect, I don't want to say perfection out of myself. I expect to try to be as perfect as possible in what I do. And I know I can't be, and I know I'm not, but there's nothing wrong with trying to be the best you can be. And I think as I aged, I've learned that more in my lifetime, but I've always been detailed oriented. Even as a kid, I would take things apart, you know, put them back together. I love doing stuff like that. And so, you know, and that gets us into this last company we formed in 2005 called ElectroCore, which is, this is such an amazing story. Well, the Ericos, who I started K2 Medical with, in 2005, we wanted to look for a way to treat patients who had allergic reactions that didn't require pharmaceuticals. Because right now, if someone has an allergic reaction, guess what? Here comes the EpiPen. You're jabbing them in the thigh, shoving Epi into them, you know? Well, one of the co-founder's daughter was highly allergic to something. So we started looking at vagus nerve stimulation. And vagus nerve stimulation has been around since the 1800s. They used to do it back in the late 1800s to treat seizures. What they did is carotid massage. They would rub on someone's carotid artery, not realizing they're stimulating the vagus nerve, and it would decrease seizures. In the late 1900s, actually, a company came out called Cyberonix, which did a vagal nerve implant. They put an implant in your skull that stimulated the vagus nerve to decrease the frequency of seizures. FDA approved. Turned out to be $1 billion company. And by the late 1900s, people were looking into vagus nerve stimulation for the treatment of more than just seizures, inflammatory disease. Because what we realized is the vagus nerve is the largest nerve in the body, coming from the brain. It's the largest cranial nerve. And it innervates the brain. It innervates your endocrine system, your neurotransmitters. It controls your heart rate, what we call the autonomic nervous system, things you can't control. So the vagus nerve controls your heart rate, your breathing rate, you know, your GI motility. And what we realize is that there's a central pathway when people get sick. So when people get sick, it's usually based on inflammation, okay? There's some, all these diseases are, have a background of causing inflammation in some degree. Well, some people that have an alteration in their neurotransmitters, they get an inflammatory reaction that leads to migraine headaches. Some people are more predisposed to get asthma, so they get asthma attacks. And so what we realize is by stimulating the vagus nerve, we can decrease inflammation, and we can actually reverse certain attacks, such as allergic attacks and asthma attacks. And our first clinical trial, I think it was back in 2006, where we did actually implants in patients. So when a patient came to the emergency room and couldn't breathe because of asthma, and they gave them steroids and all this treatment, and the patients wouldn't respond, what would happen is the patient would require intubation. We'd have to put a tube down their throat and keep them on the ventilator for 48 to 72 hours. Well, there had to be a better thing to do besides that. So what we did is we had the emergency room doctors place a little needle in their neck, insert a probe, and stimulate the vagus nerve. And what we realized is that we had a dramatic response of the ability to stop acute asthma attacks. We could reverse them. That people didn't require intubation and didn't require tubes. But what we realize is, who in the heck wants a needle in their neck? You know, patient doesn't want a needle in their neck. Doctor in the ER doesn't want to be sticking needles in people's necks. So we had to figure out a way of doing this non-invasively. And that was the breakthrough of the company when we figured out a way of doing a non-invasive vagal nerve stimulation. And we came out with the device, and eventually we got FDA approval for cluster headaches initially. And then we got migraine approval for the acute attacks and for the prevention of migraines. And by now we have up to 6 patents in the headache world on treatment of patients with migraines and cluster headaches, paroxysmal headaches, all without pharmaceuticals, with the use of a vagal nerve stimulator, which is a little device you hold it on your neck for 1.5 minutes, and it stimulates your vagus nerve. Then we realized that this also prevents health benefits, performance enhancement. And the military and the Air Force did a study on our device for the improvement of cognition of their military active duty personnel. And what this is what they found out. In their trainings, they showed that it accelerated skill attainment. You had a superior attention rate. They had lower washout rates and increased training throughout. They were more able to be more accurate on their target locations and deliveries, and it increased their performance. Basically, it got them super focused, and it all works by regulating your neurotransmitters, by stimulating the vagus nerve. We can reset the neurotransmitters in your brain to go back towards a normal level. Because what happens with inflammation is that your neurotransmitters get out of whack in your brain, and that causes inflammation. If you stimulate the vagus nerve, you can hit a reset button and rebalance the neurotransmitters in your brain to decrease inflammation.
So why is it that some people have a vagus nerve that would not, or that would be either inflamed or not stimulating? Or why is it that something is out of balance in the brain? Like you mentioned inflammation, but what comes first, like the chicken or the egg? Does it start in the brain, or does it start with the vagus nerve not working properly?
The vagus nerve is working properly.
Okay.
So it's not that the vagus nerve is not, it's that the neurotransmitters, you have some type of exposure that causes inflammation. Okay, say you're allergic to cats, okay? You go near a cat, your immune response says, wait a second, a cat's here, so I'm going to cause inflammation to fight off what the cat's trying to give you. So your body goes into a fight mode, which is inflammation. That causes the neurotransmitters in your brain to come off whack. What we do is by stimulating the vagus nerve, we can reset those neurotransmitters. That's the theory behind this, okay?
It's simply overruling the brain.
It's basically we hitting a reset button.
Okay.
And so now we have a military device called TAC-STIM that is now being ordered by the military for the use in active military personnel for performance enhancement. And we've now come out with an over-the-counter model called Truvaga for performance enhancement, stress reduction, anxiety reduction.
It would also work for migraines, then, as you mentioned, potentially. Or my wife has ocular migraines that she gets every now and then, where her vision goes blurry and then she gets a migraine shortly after, and she doesn't really know what it's from. And so maybe potentially something there as well.
For preventive and for the acute treatment of. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, and it's worth a try. The nice thing, the beauty about this device is there's virtually minimal side effects. I mean, look at the side effects with drugs. This is what I want to do. I told the company, we need to run a commercial. Show all this possible side effects of a drug and the possible side effects of our device. Skin irritation, that's about it. Be serious.
Yeah.
You know, because if you don't use the gel, you can get skin irritation. You know, look at the side effects of these drugs. May cause cancer, you may drop dead, your heart may stop and bounce out of your body. The things you see on TV, I'm sitting there going, who would take that medicine?
I love watching the commercials on TV when it comes to drugs, because they always have people playing in the background. It's like they try to deceive the mind with the visuals. And when they announce all those things and they list off all those side effects, I'm like, man, they do a really good job of trying to confuse the brain and how bad these things are, because the people all look healthy and jumping around and smiling. But yeah, that's interesting.
It's an exciting new source of revenue for the company, both the military and over the counter. And those are just coming out now, like in the past few months.
And our biggest,
we're a publicly traded company. Our biggest right now purchasers of the units is the VA for the treatment of migraines of patients in the VA. They're our largest patient source. But right now we just partnered with Jones Healthcare, one of a very large insurance company, which has more patients than the VA. So that's going to be another good source of revenue for the company for the treatment of headaches. But this is an exciting year because there's so many things. We've now applied for PTSD treatment. And that application hopefully should be hopefully in the next few months.
And would you say PTSD is roughly the same, regardless if it's like related to war or loss of a child or whatever it is? Is PTSD roughly the same response that happens in the brain?
100%. 100%, Alex. I think when you talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, you're not just talking about war. You're talking about NFL players, CTE. CTE is chronic inflammation. Everything is inflammatory based. Every disease that I know I think is inflammatory based. Well, if it's inflammatory based and this device can decrease inflammation, it makes common sense. This may help some of these processes. So now the NFL came to us and is doing a study with the NFL and the NFL Players Association for the treatment of concussions, which is huge, which is very large for us. You know, the NFL recognizing this product. And in my opinion, it's going to be used for the prevention and treatment of concussions in athletes. That's my belief when this study results come out. We also have data that should come out on stroke. If you have an acute stroke, you can decrease the size of the stroke volume if you treat a patient within a certain time frame. So there's an exciting world of non-invasive vagal nerve stimulation out there. And we've just touched the beginnings of this.
So,
this.
So when you were a surgeon, you were, you know, healing people one by one. But yeah, stepping out into the business world now really allows you to impact people in the thousands, if not in the millions. So this is really huge for you on that side. So having been involved, having built your reputation, all these things sound like your life is an incredible trajectory. I know you've had some damage to your arms, but man, it sounds like everything in your life from a business perspective is going great. Like, you've written an incredible playbook, so to speak.
I've been blessed to have a partner. I give credit to my wife as a partner. She's an attorney, non-practicing. She helps with the family management of all our assets. And I've been blessed. I have truly been blessed because I love what I do. And as ElectroCore follows into this, the whole theme of non-invasive treatment to patients. Remember when I said I didn't want to operate on you, I want to get you better without surgery? All those PGA players I took care of that got better without surgery. This is the same thing, but as you said, a much larger scale. We can get people better with ElectroCore without the side effects of drugs.
And people might also come sooner because a lot of people might put off surgery or might seeing someone till things get really bad versus, you know, if it's over the counter. Maybe people do something proactively or when things are just starting off.
And the nice thing is they can go to our website, truvaga.com, T-R-U-V-A-G-A.com, and it's over-the-counter device for health and wellness. And I believe this is going to become an integral part. I use it every day, Alex. I use the device every day, and it increases my sharpness and my focus. It's a very intriguing device. I've given it to professional athletes that they go and they play golf and they shoot 8 strokes better than they used to play. And I'm like, and they're like, this is so amazing. You just focus.
Can you spell it again? Can you spell it again? Because I'm going to put in the show notes. It's T-R-U.
TRUVAGA. And the company is that's truvaga.com. That's the over-counter version. And the company is Electrocore, ElectroCore.com. Electrocore.com.
Make sure that's in the show notes as well. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
And then you said you have three kids. Your wife's an attorney. She's been an incredible partner. You maybe missed some parts of your kids' lives growing up. Are you more involved in their day-to-day now, or how's your family dynamic on that side from a personal perspective?
Since 2001, I've never missed an event of my kids. When I changed, I've not missed anything. My sons were fortunate to play college football, two of my three boys, and it was D3, but they played. Well, I went to every single game. I would go to my youngest son was like all state in football down here in Florida. It was recruited by the D3 schools. And so he was playing on Friday nights. So I would go to his games on Friday nights with my wife, catch a plane and fly to Cleveland to watch my son's game Saturday morning at noon.
Oh, wow.
And we only missed one game of my son's college career. The one he got his ACL tear.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The one game I didn't go, my son ruptures his ACL. And he goes, okay, Dad, I'm not going to be an NFL player, so I'm going to progress. And all three of my boys went to grad school. My oldest went to the Royal Academy of Art and Design in London and does app user interfaces for drones for the military in Huntsville, Alabama. My middle son is a JD MBA. Practicing business law in Chicago. And my youngest went to Wash U Business School and is shooting up the rocketing up the pole at Microsoft in finance department. He was interested in the Microsoft purchase of the London Stock Exchange.
Oh, no way.
And currently he just got promoted to go to market for AI.
Wow, good for him.
Yeah, and he loves it, but, you know, he's going to be my CEO one day.
Wow, that's incredible. I love that.
Three beautiful boys that we have a wonderful family dynamics. Since, it's amazing, Alex, since I quit medicine, my personality change has been remarkable. I've calmed down. I'm nicer. I'm more relaxed. I'm much more spiritual. I go to the monastery. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. I go to the monastery in Greece frequently. And I've continued to be very spiritual. And you know, it's been even though I'm in a lot of pain and I still have a lot of pain for my issues, I'm enjoying my family much more.
That's amazing. I love your story. I love your story from a business perspective, from a work ethic, from a diligence, from a compassion perspective of ethics, and also now your transformation story as a, you know, it relates to you going into Wharton, shifting into the executive world or the business world and finance, and then making such an impact for thousands or millions of people and having your family a focus of that now and recognizing the importance of all of that. And it seems like you've captured a lot of life of what it's at least supposed to be like. So it's an incredible story. And I'm grateful that you shared that with us today.
Well, thank you, Alex. And I really appreciate the chance to speak to you about this. It's funny. I really don't like talking about myself. I won't look at if I ever do an interview, because I've done a lot of TV interviews, I never look at them because I always critique myself. So I probably won't even listen to this. I'll let my family listen to it. But it's I love speaking about the journey, because the journey has been amazing. And I wouldn't change my life for the world of it. I've experienced everything. I've gone through ups and I've gone through severe downs. And we all do, Alex. We all have ups and downs in our lives. And I've hit the bottom floor and I bounce back up. My family brings me back up and we maintain a very strong family dynamic. I married a Greek girl and we have a very strong traditional Greek family, and it's the center of my life, and everything I do now is for my kids. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. My wife and I work now for our kids' future.
I love that.
Yeah.
And ups and downs. What would you say were your biggest ups and your biggest downs?
When you're working 24/7 and you're missing your kids grow up, and you go to a football party one night and people look at you and they go, I never knew Kathy had a husband. they've never thought my wife actually was married. They wow. never saw me for so many years. That was a low point for me. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't involved in my family dynamics and my kids growing up, and I missed that, and that was a low point for me. Yeah. Also, the stress of medicine can pull you down. You know, as I said, if you have a complication in medicine, I was the type of person, it crushed me for months. And I did everything I can not to do the best work possible to make people better. So there's low points in medicine, a lot of low points in medicine. You just have to be able to bring yourself back up and say, you know, I'm here to help people.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been an incredible story. Is there anything else we want to touch on here?
That's about it. I appreciate if everyone goes and looks at True Vega and Electrical. Really fascinating work. And I think you're going to start hearing more and more about the company, especially if the NFL, when the NFL trials come out.
Well, I'll definitely take a look and I'll put it in the show notes as well. So thank you for sharing.